Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Eat Okra, your guide to Black-owned restaurants. Download the Eat Okra app on your smartphone today.
Welcome to a new episode of Item 13. Today I'm thrilled to have Rachel Lai on the show. For a variety of reasons, but one, and this is not to say that I don't love Rachel, but I really love the topic we're going to be talking about. Love plantains. I've always loved plantains. And in my travels around the world, I'm just always baffled by, one, people who have not heard of plantains, or two, just don't like it. Even Ghanaians that don't like plantains. I'm like, what in the world? Anyway, so... First, welcome to the show, Rachel. Really thrilled to have you on.
Thank you so much for having me.
Want to start first by learning a little bit about you. So who is Rachel? What do you want to tell us about yourself?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. So, I am Ghanaian, even though I was born in the States. My parents were born in Ghana and migrated here. And so definitely come from and grew up with a very kind of strong Ghanaian upbringing, cultural upbringing. And so that really was important to me. And as we continue to have this conversation, you'll see how it kind of like shaped my trajectory in a number of different ways. But that aside, you know, currently I am a dual PhD candidate at Yale University, where I study Black capitalists in the transatlantic financial industry. And also, I am the founder and CEO of Kelewele, which is all about plantains reimagined and really a cultural lifestyle brand, really focused on connecting the African diaspora through food, culture, and innovation while centering plantains in really innovative and creative ways.
Cool. So there's a few things I want to unpack in there as you talk about it. One, on your PhD, I think we talked about this before when we met in New York, but maybe share a little bit about why you chose the focus, you know, what you're focusing on in your PhD.
Yeah, great question.
Because that's really interesting, I think.
Yeah. So when it comes to my PhD, that actually has a lot to do with what I was doing prior to grad school, right out of undergrad. I actually started my professional career on Wall Street. I was at Goldman Sachs. And it was happenstance. I would have never thought that I would wind up in the finance industry, but I did. And it was so kind of transformative for me, but also informative in terms of kind of the graduate studies that I've shaped out for myself now. And graduate school is always kind of something I thought that I would pursue, but I wasn't quite sure what my area of study would be. But while I was on Wall Street, I grew really interested in how Black financial professionals really kind of conceive of success in that space. How do they navigate that space where historically, of course, as we know, they've been marginalized? But then also there was this trend that I was noticing that for a lot of Black professionals who kind of see their place on Wall Street as one of kind of diminishing returns, where for whatever reason they don't feel valued or their skill set isn't kind of compensated as it should be, they were leaving and creating financial institutions of their own elsewhere, or kind of finding ways to kind of critically invest in the African continent. And, you know, these folks were either diasporans or born on the continent and migrated elsewhere. And so that was a really kind of interesting phenomenon to kind of track. And I was noticing a lot of the folks who were turning to the continent were looking specifically at Ghana, and how they could think about transforming the financial industry there and by extension kind of the global financial industry. And so that, you know, big research topic and all the questions that come with it shaped my research now. And even though it's, you know, focused on finance and entrepreneurship, there's certainly a lot of parallels with my own entrepreneurship and the kind of work that I do with Kelawele, even though that's food and totally different, you know, right, in some fundamental ways.
Yeah. So that's actually a good sort of segue into then, like, how did you end up in the world of food? What was your inspiration to start Kelawele?
Yeah. So as I was saying in my little kind of intro, you know, growing up in a Ghanaian home, that was totally informative for the business, you know. And I tell people my own plantain love story started when, you know, as far back as I can remember, my mom making me Kelawele, and I fell in love. And it's funny because, I mean, as you know, you can have ripe plantains that are naturally sweet and delicious. And I had such a sweet tooth as a little kid, and my mom would never let us eat like candy or things like that. So plantains were like the closest I could get to dessert. And I was just hooked and obsessed from that point as a little kid, and was always so excited to eat them. And over time, you know, plantains just grew to have different levels of importance in my life. And, you know, so it started as a kid loving them. And then I got older, you know, I was an undergrad at NYU and a broke, you know, undergrad at that. And like, plantains are super affordable. You know, I get them for two for a dollar, four for a dollar sometimes. So it was like always something I could rely on as like an easy, affordable budget item for groceries any week. And then later on, you know, I went vegan. Again, plantains became like a go-to vegan staple, both for like a dairy substitute and a meat substitute. And then later on, you know, in starting my grad program, you know, which is joint in African American studies and anthropology. And for me, being a cultural anthropologist, I got really interested in this question of culture and all the different ways in which cultural production takes shape in different societies, and food being one of the staple kind of cultural productions that we can turn to understand how people understand themselves individually and collectively. And so there's a whole narrative around how plantains became and are, at least for me, this symbol of the diaspora, because, you know, I can be from Ghana, the next person can be from the Caribbean, the next person can be from Latin America, but we all have this kind of shared familiarity with plantains. And so I loved all of that. And so that's what kind of really inspired me to do something, because I felt like, you know, plantains were more than just food. They were kind of symbolic of all these other things I was talking about, whether it be health or culture or identity. And so that's what really kind of put the fire in my butt to get going. Yeah. But it really all started with just, you know, my mom making them for me as a kid.
That's so interesting, especially when you talk about this idea of the interconnectedness, let me say that right, interconnectedness of food cultures, especially around plantain, because as you probably know by now, I've mentioned it to the hilt over and over again, but I just have lived and worked around the world, actually primarily through my work in financial services. One of the common threads for me, like everywhere I go, is looking for plantain. Like, it's literally the thing I look for. Not even kidding. Like, everywhere I go.
And that's amazing.
One, so that, you know, so that for me is like my connection to the idea of home when I'm, you know, living and working abroad. And then two, just my connection to other people and the places that I go to because of the different ways in which they treat or they view plantain as part of their food culture, right? And so being in South Africa, and I've shared this on the podcast before, I was just blown away, one, by the fact that South Africans don't eat plantains. So
they're not a staple.
Yeah.
You gotta really look for them.
I had to, and it was just this, like, I remember Sundays, I'm literally like going around, and Johannesburg is spread out. If anybody's been to Johannesburg, it's super spread out. And so I'm calling grocery stores. I'm calling grocery stores across Joburg to see, because I'm like, okay, I have the whole day. I'm going to go wherever I can find it. And yeah. I remember specifically one story. I'm probably going over time here, but I remember the story one time I went to a grocery store. Where I finally had found plantains. I was literally filling my grocery basket, and luckily wow. they were like green. So I was like, okay, this is gonna, I can get as much as I want and it will last. Oh. So I'm like loading up my basket, and then this older South African woman comes to me and says, oh, like, why are you getting all these plantains? Like, little girl, like, I'm with people have met me in person, I'm small in stature. And so she's like, oh, little girl, why are you getting all these, she said bananas. Mm. And I was like, no, these are not bananas, these are plantains. She's like, what are plantains? And I'm like, oh, my God. And so then I describe it to her. And yeah. I explained the different things you can do. And she was so fascinated, like her eyes opened. I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm having to do this on the African continent. But yeah.
Right.
Wow. That's just always been so interesting to me. And then even like when I lived in Joburg too, like I had a lot of friends from East Africa who then would have this conversation about whether they are cooking bananas or plantain, because they have a different view on what that is. So it's always interesting to me, and just spot on in terms of your experience and how that ties into what I've seen and experienced right. around the world.
I love that. I love that story.
I'm plantain freak. So.
A woman after my own heart.
you inspired by this, by your personal and lived experiences, the things you're learning through, your education. What there's a lot of us who like, I'm interested in this or that, but then don't actually go forward and do anything about it. So what, I know you said it lit a fire in you, like what specifically, what pushed you to say, okay, I'm actually going to do this and actually physically start doing it. And then how did you start? Like, what were the things that you did?
Yeah. That's a great question. I think for me, it was actually friends. I think maybe my friends just got tired of me talking about it for so long, because I can remember a distinct conversation I was having with a friend of mine, in the spring of 2018. And he's like, you really should just do it, just start. And it was just like a light bulb clicked. And I was like, you know what, you're right, I should just do it. It just sounded simple at that point. I think leading up to it, it would be this kind of nagging idea, but it seemed so cumbersome. And I was like, okay, maybe later. But for some reason at that point, everything kind of aligned. And I was like, okay, I think this is time. And so how it started was very small, just by creating different dishes, which I was already doing, but this time around, I was more diligent and kind of writing down my recipes and being very kind of methodical and just writing everything down and archiving everything. And I had a first event. It was like a super small kickback in my apartment, and I called it a plantain kickback. And it was maybe like 8 or 10 of my friends that came. And I just kind of showcased a bunch of the different dishes that I had been working on. And, everyone loved it. We had a really great time. And, this speaks to like my poor sense of like scale, because I had that tiny event in my Brooklyn apartment. And then from there, I decided, I should sign up for a festival. New York City, we have all these different festivals. Mm-hmm. And so the International African Arts Festival has been a staple festival in the community for many, many years now. And it's a 4-day festival. And it's 4 consecutive days, starts at like 9 a.m., ends at like 10 p.m. every day. And I was like, I can do this. I can.
All 4 days?
Yes.
Oh my God.
Exactly. I was not properly thinking through logistically, operationally, how to make that happen. But I was like, just off of such good energy from the kickback, I was like, okay, I can do this, And so it was the most incredible learning curve, for such a short period of time, but it was awesome. And I think it was a great way actually to kind of get started and just dive deep end and get going. But then from there, continued to do festivals, different pop-ups, was really hit the ground running by doing that. And then we expanded slowly but surely. But yeah, that's how it got started. It was really just a conversation.
That's great. And I think I actually didn't, when you said just do it, it's actually, I was interviewed on a podcast a couple of weeks ago where someone asked me the same question. And I thought, like, I don't even know. I hadn't thought about it in a really long time. And then I said, you know, it was a just do it thing too, right? So it was just do the first, the take the next step and the next step. Like, I thought of an idea and I just did it. And then based on that, you know.
Yeah.
You know, sort of tweak stuff and then, okay, I can do X, Y. And then it just sort of grew, right? So
sometimes
you don't need to have like all your T's crossed and your I's dotted.
Exactly.
You just need to take that first step and then things just will sort of fall where they may.
Exactly.
So let's talk now before we go on break about your product line, all the amazing, because if you guys go, and we'll share this in the show notes, where you can find Kelly Willie and all that. But especially on their Instagram page, like, don't go onto that page hungry. You're going to see so many delectable things, some of which you will even be surprised are made out of plantain. So I want to talk about all the different offerings that you've sort of created over the years. And then especially your latest one, especially, which I'm most excited about, plantain wine. But let's start with the baked goods and the ice creams and whatnot.
Yeah. So as you'll see on the website or on our Instagram, you know, our creations really span the gamut from beverages, you know, entrees, appetizers, kind of big plates, desserts, literally anything you could think of we've probably made with plantains at this point. And, you know, certainly I think our sweet treats have been our kind of most fascinating items, for kind of the trajectory, for really the long span of the time we've been in business, but especially our plantain ice cream, which, you know, the base of that is our plantain milk. And it comes in a number of different flavors, and it's also my favorite product offering when people ask, and not because of the taste, because all of our products taste really delicious, but really because it just took the longest time to get right. Because anyone who knows kind of vegan ice cream, you know, oftentimes people will say, oh, does it taste like regular ice cream? Or, you know, the consistency, texture, it has a weird kind of aftertaste. And so all those reasons, it was really important for me to kind of get it to a really good place. Because I think vegan food is still on the come up, and I think that you do vegan food really well when people are able to eat it and not even know that it's vegan, because oftentimes people come with their own kind of thoughts and ideas about what vegan food is going to be like, oftentimes not the best impression. So that was really important. And so the ice cream is definitely a popular one. For a number of our restaurant partnerships, they also carry our plantain cookies, chocolate chip cookies, our plantain brownies. So people really love those. And then, of course, you know, when it comes to like kind of bigger catering items, people also really love like our plantain lasagna, our burgers. You know, it's pretty crazy, but
that's
really all delicious.
My gosh. That all sounds so good. I'm so bummed. Next time you're going to Ghana, we should coordinate, because I would love to have you do a pop-up situation in our restaurant space, because just now thinking about it, I can think there's so many facets, and we should probably discuss it offline, but I think I can think about it just in terms of one, the vegan piece in terms of educating people about maybe not necessarily going full vegan for the super traditional Ghanaian, but like eating less meat, I think, for especially in our in Ghana is that's a whole other discussion. But then also sort of the work you do and how that ties into food cultures and all of that stuff with plantain, I think would be fantastic. One product I want to talk about before we go on break really quick, this is plantain wine. So this is the one thing with COVID. So like I literally pre-COVID, I was probably in New York like once a quarter. Like, I'm in New York quite a bit. And so one for personal reasons, and then also just because the plethora of food options is just out of this world. And I get to try and meet cool people like Rachel, and then I also get to try different types of foods and whatnot. And so this is the bummer about COVID. It's like I can't even get to places to try. I've interviewed a few people for this season who are based in New York that I hadn't heard of before the season started. I'm like, man, and it doesn't look like things are gonna light up anytime soon. But here we are. Okay, plantain wine. Like, I'm also a big fan of wine. And so when I first saw plantain wine, I was like, oh my God.
Yeah. And it's funny because I was thinking, because we had all of our kind of, you know, actual food items, we weren't really thinking about beverages until we then created our plantain peel tea. And that's what kind of put us on this whole journey of the bevs. And I was like, oh goodness, someone had mentioned to me in South Africa, they have banana beer that you can have. And I was like, oh, that's a really interesting concept. Let me tuck that one away and then think about later how I can create like a plantain beer. And so that's what started the journey. So now we have our plantain beer, plantain cider, and our plantain wine. And so it's just so kind of funky, crazy. You know, I can't even believe it sometimes that I'm spending my days like figuring out how to make, you know, these things with plantains. But yeah, it's been a really good reception. I actually took the plantain wine to Ghana this year and got to vend it at a couple of places, and people were able to order. One of the places we did the Afrocella block party, which was a lot of fun, and got to kind of share it with folks out there. And it's similar to palm wine, actually.
Oh, really?
If you're familiar. And so it gives that same kind of feeling when you drink it, but of course you get a very kind of strong plantain flavor rather than the palm.
I'm excited to try it soon.
Yes.
I think you answered this already, but let me maybe if I phrase it this way, what product like are you either most proud of or excited to see people react to?
I mean, I think it would still be the plantain ice cream. I mean, even though I think the beverages have been like definitely piquing people's interest, again, I'm just kind of a sucker for the ice cream because I remember all of those nights where I was just like trying to perfect it. So it's like really my baby as opposed to the other products, which, you know, I care for and love, but the ice cream has a special place in my heart. And I think that especially in this time where you see within the frozen dessert industry, there's, you know, again, the vegan ice creams on the rise. You see even like a Ben and Jerry's having a vegan option. And oftentimes these nice creams, I should say, are based with like coconut milk or almond milk and different things. I think for us to be able to produce a product made from plantain milk and then have all these different flavors that are, you know, more mainstream, but then also kind of really interesting flavors that play on our roots being African and the different kind of ingredients and flavors that we enjoy there, I think is really incredible. And so I'm excited a long term for really the reception of how people receive it. Yeah.
Cool. All right. So we'll take a quick break now. And then when we come back, we'll talk more about the business of Kayleigh Williams, some other aspects of the brand we haven't touched on quite yet. And then we'll wrap up with the rapid fire segment. So you're listening to Item 13. We will be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Eat Okra, your guide to Black-owned restaurants. If you'd like to support local Black-owned businesses, or maybe just find a new favorite place to eat, download the Eat Okra app now. Fill your home pantry with some great Black-owned products by shopping in their new marketplace. Available on the app soon.
So we're back from the break. We've been talking to Rachel, all things plantain and Killer Willy, her interesting background in terms of her journey to getting here, and then all of the different delicious things she does with plantain. Now I wanted to talk a little bit more about the business itself in relation to like your background and experience. So one, just this idea of running a food business in like New York, that, you know, which I think is a mecca of food. And also juggling it with being a student, right? So being a PhD. Like, I think we talk about all these great things you're doing, but not in the context of the fact that you still also have to, you know, fulfill your responsibilities as a student. So I wonder how you juggle all of that, because there's a lot of people I speak to or I have come in contact with or experienced who have really great ideas or who start something and stop, you know, and I'm talking specifically in the African food space because of their other commitments and trying to figure out how to juggle it and all that. And some really, really great ideas, but just don't come to fruition. Mm-hmm. So I want to talk about your experience to give people a sense of what that's like, and then maybe some ideas for being able to juggle.
Yeah. You know, it is not easy. And to this day, because people ask me the balance question all the time, and, you know, I'm still on that journey of kind of figuring out how to do that really well. Because, you know, I think some days I'm a really great student and I'm able to put a lot of focus and prioritize my energy into, you know, my field work and the dissertation. And then other times I'm a really great entrepreneur and like Killer Willy is really thriving because I'm putting all the energy there. And so, but that, I mean, that doesn't always work naturally, because whenever you're paying attention to something, that means you're not paying attention to something else. And I think, you know, for now, what's really been helpful is to really grow slowly but surely a team of folks that I really trust, especially when it comes to the business. You know, of course, the dissertation, that's for me to complete myself. But, you know, for the business, that's something that will definitely require and has required since its inception, a community much larger than myself could ever, you know, conceive of to really get it up and running and to be successful. And so building a team and whatever, you know, pieces of work that I can't do myself and really getting folks that I trust to help in doing that has made all of the difference in terms of just keeping the business going, you know, from a bare bones perspective. And so that's been huge. So for the, you know, when it's like, I only have so much time, but to be able to spread that out and delegate makes a big difference. Yeah,
I think that's really key. Community, that community piece is really key. And even starting to delegate, which I'm learning or relearning over the last few months, I've brought on a couple of people, which has been great.
Then
it allows you, I hesitated for a long time and I don't know, it's patch of the, you know, type A and I like really want to be in all of the details. But at the same time, I've just discovered how much time that frees me up to focus on more strategic, I hate this term, but it's my business background, more strategic parts of the business, you know, versus trying to just chug along. So one question I wanted to, although it sounds almost... what's the word? Not cliche at this point, but I wanted to get a sense of, especially because New York was, or maybe still is, sort of in some ways the epicenter of some of the COVID, the COVID outbreak in the U.S., let's say, like how that impacted you and your business in the last year. And I guess, in the last year, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, impact was devastating in a lot of ways. You know, I think for us, especially because we lead with the ice cream, you know, festivals are really important for our business because the spring and summer months are where we're able to really capture the most amount of revenue. And so, of course, naturally, all of those festivals were canceled. And so we took a big hit that last year, and we suspect to do the same this year, just given kind of where things are right now. But, you know, I think in that kind of stillness of everything just being put on pause and stopping, it gave us time to really pay attention to the things that we had been neglecting when it came from even just like a branding and marketing perspective, and just getting our house in order. Because I think when you're just so focused sometimes on, you know, the product, getting it out there, going to different events, sometimes you're not doing as much as you can to kind of fine tune the narrative to make sure people are really having good understanding of what it is you're selling in the first place and why it matters. And kind of the things we were talking before around culture and food ways and why that is so integral to the business. And so it gave us time to kind of take inventory of what we were doing well, what we weren't, and where we could really improve. So that was kind of the silver lining of last year and, you know, the onslaught of COVID for us. And it also gave us time to kind of pivot and, you know, introduce new products that we otherwise wouldn't have had the time to do, like the cookbook. That was like our really
big signature. Yeah, I wanted to talk about that next, actually.
Yeah, no, it was a great segue to that because, you know, it really was at the, you know, in the crux of COVID, we're like, oh, this is something that we've been thinking about. And of course, if we've been documenting all of our recipes since we've started. And so we felt this was a really great time to kind of share more than just the recipes, but the stories and the kind of, you know, the character of Kalawele in the written form. So that was really exciting for us to be able to do.
Yeah, I really wanted to touch on that because especially in the format in which you did, because I thought, one, it's a beautiful book. And again, it's one of those things we'll link to so people can get it. I got it on Amazon. So I think it's on Amazon.
Yes, that's where I think I got it.
Yeah, so it's easy to get on Amazon. But it's a beautiful cookbook. And outside of the great pictures and recipes, I really like the way different stories are sort of interwoven into the experience of the cookbook. So it's very well done. Did you have to redo or create new dishes for the cookbook or...?
We did some fine tuning, but all of those recipes were kind of staples, at least for me, that I was always kind of working with. But you'd be well, at least for me, I'm surprised, you know, when you're kind of putting a book together, you got to be very particular with, you know, the, you know, measurements and everything. And so there was a lot of fine tuning that went into it for sure.
Yeah. And you self-published, did you?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. You know, it was interesting because, you know, it's like when I started it, of course, I had no idea about book publishing. And funny enough, it's like I always thought my first book would be an academic piece because naturally, you know, being in academia. Yeah. But funny enough, it was a cookbook. And I was like, what am I doing? How am I doing it? You know, and so got some feedback from some friends. And I just felt like, you know what, I think self-publishing is the way to go for this first book to see how we do. Yeah, and just kind of share it with the world and share it with our community. And then we'll kind of iterate from there. But yeah, it was definitely just like a journey of doing something totally different, left field for us, and seeing how it landed.
Yeah, no, for what it's worth, it's a great book.
Thank you.
Yeah. I very much enjoyed going through that. Awesome. Okay, so you were recently in Ghana, right?
Yes.
From Instagram stalking you, you're in Ghana. And I was just curious because, one, you had a lot of pictures of plantain. Uh-huh. And wanted to check in to see if you had any new insights or aha moments about plantain or how you'd like to even approach Kalawele going forward based on your experience being in Ghana this time around.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I think, you know, for us, it's not just about having Kalawele in the States because, you know, for me being Ghanaian and having the business, I mean, it's named Kalawele, which is a Ghanaian food even. Yeah. So it's really important to get back to the continent, specifically back to our Ghanaian roots and have the business engaging in that way. And so, you know, we started last year actually, and was one of the official food vendors of Afrocello. We came back this year and did the block party. But it's been interesting, even in these 2 years of getting the business back to Ghana, the reception has increased. And it's fascinating because the first time we were there, people were like, okay, well, your name is Kelawele. I'm expecting you to have Kelawele. And, you know, and then it's like when you tell people you have plantain ice cream, it's like, what are you talking about? And I mean, of course, we have our staple Kelawele, but like the whole point is innovation and these other pieces. And so people are kind of like hesitant. You're talking plantain ice cream to them. They have no idea because they've never tried that before. So there was a whole education piece that was going around or going on, not only just about the business, but about all the different things you could do with plantains. And then there's the piece around kind of health and introducing new ways to kind of eat food where there's no meat or dairy involved. And so then we come back next year and it was like a really beautiful thing to see some people just coming up to us and saying, oh, we heard what you're doing. This is awesome. Like, let's try the plantain wine, you know? And so I think people were kind of somehow or another kind of catching wind of what we were doing. So that was reassuring in its own way. But I'd also just felt kind of like an easier process. There wasn't as much of a kind of barrier to entry to kind of engage people on this. What at the time, the first year we went, felt like a really foreign idea for some of the folks we were kind of engaging. And so I think that the lesson there that just left me feeling kind of really excited about the potential for the kind of work that we're doing, you know, in a Ghanaian context, in an African context, and the scalability of that to provide kind of innovative, healthy foods that's really predicated on African superfood already. And so that was exciting, and I'm hoping continues to be a ever-growing trend and not just like a random one-off experience. But yeah, so that was kind of a big takeaway for me that I really appreciated.
Yeah, that's cool. And Ghanaians, even with us trying to, well, we found our own challenges in trying to get this restaurant up and running. But one of the things, like in the background, is just thinking about sort of innovative ways to present like our cuisine, and the one you know, some of the things we think about is how will it be received, and because Ghanaians can also be very particular about their foods and wanting it in a certain way. So I definitely can recognize that challenge, but I can also see the potential and sort of even the I can't think of the word, but just probably when people experience it and get, you know, they sort of almost not realizing, oh my gosh, like this is cool, interesting, different way to explain. I'm looking forward to that part of the journey. Yeah. For sure.
Right.
Yeah. So what's next for Kelawele for this year and beyond? I know you're fundraising for a food truck, right?
Yes. Yes. And so this year is actually a really exciting year. And you're actually the first one for me to kind of officially announce it to. You're getting some new news here. So, you know, as you know, we are fundraising for the food truck, and that's, you know, slow and steady. And we'll continue to do that. But something that we're really excited about, and we just signed the contract for actually, is a partnership with DeKalb Market Hall. Have you been there in downtown Brooklyn?
No, I've seen it, but I haven't. I'm familiar, but I haven't been in
there. Gotcha. So, I mean, you're familiar with downtown Brooklyn, though. Highly trafficked, a lot of folks. And so there's a really awesome market hall downstairs of, like, the major City Point building. And so we've signed the contract, so we'll be one of the food vendors in that space.
Congratulations. Yes.
Thank you. That's super amazing. Yeah, because we'll be there, and some of our buddies, like Taranga, is one of the vendors there.
That's why they're going to be. I knew that they were going to Brooklyn, but I didn't know where.
Yeah. Okay. So they're at DeKalb. Yeah, so we will be there starting July 1st. So we're super, super excited. And of course, we're going to keep fundraising for the food truck, but that, it's something that we'd hope to get going this spring, but it looks like just kind of in terms of the speed in which we're raising funds, it might have to be a next year play. So this, I think, it gives us a really good opportunity to continue to build engagement, exposure, and then kind of can continue some of our other goals as we go into the next year.
That's exciting. July. Yeah. Okay. I hope, right?
Fingers crossed. I'm like,
I hope somehow, some way, you know, the world changes and I can at least travel and, you know, safely get some good food out in Brooklyn. Oh, that's amazing. Yeah. Congrats. Yeah. That's a big deal.
Thank you so much. Yeah, you and I both really praying that come summer, you know, we're at a very different place. Yeah. But yeah, so we're super excited about that. And now we're in the just grind mode of getting, you know, our ducks in a row with that opportunity. But yeah, so that's going to be huge for us.
That's amazing. Actually, this just popped in my head as you talked about the slow raising funds for the food. Have you heard of iFundWoman?
I have. And, you know, we've applied for grants in that space. It's something we continue to do. I think at this point we're like, everyone has to know of us at this point, just given how many grants we've applied for. But still on that journey of applying for grants and, you know, really getting in front of as many organizations as we can. Yeah.
All right. Awesome. Okay. So before we transition to rapid fire, can you let people know where they can find you on online, social media? If they're in New York, how can they get
some of the goodies? Of course. So if you're in New York and are interested in ordering, the best way to do that is through our website, kelawelenyc.com, and you can submit an order request. You can check out our menu, submit an order request, and that is for pickup in Brooklyn as of now. We do plan on offering some kind of delivery options between now and when we launch at DeKalb, so look out for that. But for now, it's just pickup in Brooklyn via order request on our website. Otherwise, you can, if you're out of New York, we don't do kind of shipping yet of our products, but you can definitely still engage us by ordering the cookbook via Amazon if you want the paperback, or you can reach out to us via our website for the ebook version, which is a bit discounted as well. So for those who are out of state, you can still engage with us that way. And then also, of course, just kind of following and sharing our Instagram page. That's been a huge kind of way for us to kind of engage community. And we've really loved that. So definitely follow and share on Instagram to kind of keep up with what we're doing, because we're pretty good about posting and sharing where we're at and what we're up to.
Cool. Awesome. All right. Yeah. So now we'll do a rapid fire segment.
Okay, cool.
Easy questions. So the first one is breakfast or dinner?
Dinner.
Would you
like breakfast for dinner?
I'm a breakfast food person, so I can eat breakfast food any time of the day for sure. Would you rather have more money or more free time?
More free time. Ooh, that's a good question. more free time. I'm going to keep my answer.
Yes. This one was especially for you. Fried plantain or Kiliwili? Because people think it's the same thing and it's not.
And it's not. It is not at all. Oh my goodness. I get so annoyed.
Yeah, me too.
I think I'm going to say fried plantain. Because I can only have so much Kiliwili at one sitting. Fried plantain, I can just kick it back nonstop. So yeah, I would do fried plantain.
And then complete the sentence. This year I'm going to eat more
kale.
No. Really?
It's true. I was just thinking, after we talk, I have to go to the grocery store and like buy kale. I need more kale.
Oh my gosh. Okay. That was totally unexpected. Okay.
If you thought I was going to say plantain, because I actually really limit my intake just so I can preserve my love for them. So I don't eat them actually all that often, even though I prepare them every day. Yeah. You know, I have to watch it.
Okay. And then lastly, what would you do if you knew you could not fail?
Gosh. Well, you know, it's kind of crazy because I feel like I feel like I'm doing it.
Doing it, yeah.
You know? And yeah, I think that comes with a level of just like belief and faith that, you know, has been definitely hard to muster up, but I'm at a place where I'm like, you know what, we're not going to fail with this. We're going to do it. Between Kelawele and, you know, even the dissertation and kind of the hopes of writing this first book. Yeah. So
that's,
yeah.
That's great. And I think that's a good, Oprah calls them aha moment to have for yourself.
Yeah, you know, no, cause... I just had that. Thank you for giving me that moment. Wow.
Yeah, because then when you think about it, I got this from Oprah actually. So, because when you think about it, either whatever your answer is, it should cause you to pause and think. Like, if it's yes, yeah. You know, that's, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm actually dying. If it's no, then like, why not? Like, what's right. You know, what's stopping you or whatever. So anyway,
right. Wow.
That's me being Oprah for the day.
I love it.
All right. So this was so great. This is, I mean, when we started the conversation, I hope you guys couldn't tell, like I've just been exhausted and tired, and Rachel also has been under the weather, but like I had such a great time. Like I feel like my energy's up.
Yeah.
Although I'm still gonna go take a nap.
I was gonna say, still go to bed.
But it's been such a pleasure chatting with you. I wish you nothing but the best. I follow your story very closely. I'm excited for the things that you will do both here stateside and then back home in Ghana. And then fingers crossed, I can be in New York this summer at some point.
We're gonna make it happen.
We'll see how that goes. But thank you.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to Item 13, an African food podcast. If you like the show, please subscribe, rate, and review us on your favorite podcast app. To keep up to date, follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Item 13 Podcast. Item 13 is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a non-profit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awele, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.